What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Next Gen Sales Leader Podcast. I have Steve Ehrer here from Signals, and he's going to tell you all about why he has the cutting edge AI SDR and other types of features and functionality and why this is where the market's going. We're going to get deep into the discussion here on AI, on signal-based outreach, and exactly what's happening in the outbound market. So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Thanks. Happy to be here.
So getting into it, would love to know, what is Signals? Let's start there. And how did you get involved?
Yeah. So Signals, we listen to the digital signals of your buyers, their entire digital footprint. And we're looking at ingesting that data. And that could be everything from the size of the company to are they hiring, to their tech stack, their social engagement, whatever. We're looking at behavioral signals, but also profile signals. And then we're taking that data, and not just to identify who you should be targeting, but using that data to train and inform our cloud agents. And our cloud agents, they're essentially like cloud SDRs. You train them on your documentation, on all this digital data, and they'll do everything from respond to chats on your website to they can talk to people when they're on your website or make outbound calls when someone fills out a form or take inbound calls, event follow-up. And we're seeing some really, really cool results as companies are starting to use this to drive engagement and convert their website traffic and their buyers in general.
Quick question on the competitive landscape, because I know obviously this is a very intense space. Everybody and their mother is trying to collect signal-based data, put it into a central database, and be able to then take actions from a sales perspective on it. So I'm not going to name a bunch of different, what I would consider competing solutions, but what I'm talking about is that people out there are trying to decide what is a good automated signal-based platform that allows them to do outreach effectively. Tell us what is different about your take. How are you guys differentiating yourself? And what should people be looking for in a solution when they're evaluating all these competitors?
Yeah, I think that really there's three areas that you need to focus on, like any go-to-market motion, right? You need to focus on the intelligence, the market intelligence. How good is the data? How relevant is it? Is it useful? I think that part of the problem that I've seen in the industry is there is lots of really good data out there, and then it's up to you to figure out what to do with it. One of the big key differentiators is we're taking all of that signal data and we're saying, okay, now let's inform this agent that can do all sorts of stuff, all the menial tasks that an SDR would do, the event follow-up, the inviting to events, the form fills, and let's do that at the highest level possible, powered by all of that data. So it's the coupling of those two things together that really separate.
Now, would you consider yourself a competitor to a normal CRM, or do you say you actually are bolt-on to a CRM?
Yeah, absolutely not. Salesforce, HubSpot, those CRMs, those are crucial tools. That is where all the data is stored. So we're taking all of the interactions, just an SDR would, and let's put all that data back into your CRM so you can run all your reporting. You can do all of the analytics that you need to on your end to evaluate how everything's going. In fact, we tell our clients to treat this agent like an SDR. It's just an SDR at one-tenth the cost that never has bad days, that is always on their A game.
One of the common objections that I would assume people would ask is, and this is what you're on LinkedIn, right? You and I are both in the LinkedIn feeds. Everyone's going back and forth on these types of things.
Yeah.
And the thing that comes up constantly is this debate of AI SDR type technology is not ready for prime time. They hallucinate. They'll say they're going to mislabel things. The data is not going to be as good as we want it to. So how do you guys overcome that objection?
Yeah, I mean, that's very common. I hear that all the time. Or I hear hey, listen, I can tell when it's an AI because it's never as good. I will push back on that and say that I think there is a lot of interaction that we deal with on a daily basis that we don't realize is AI. And when it's done well, not only can't tell, but also it should call itself out. And for example, one of the things that we specify is, hey, if one of our agents calls out, one of the first things it says is, hey, this is Susan, cloud AI agent for Signals, and it calls it right out. Shouldn't try to fool anybody. But also, it goes to how you're looking at AI. I think the problem comes when you're saying, okay, I want to go from point A to point B and just AI, you figure it out. definitely need to have that objective, but you also need to put up guardrails and boundaries. Say, okay, work within this space. And then also, here is all of the information that you need to do your job well. The other thing that we want to go ahead and do is, just like you would any SDR, you coach your SDR. This went well. This didn't go well. And so while it's learning from its own experience, we tell our clients it's crucial that you go in and evaluate these calls and say, hey, this is good and this wasn't. So it can not just stay within bounds, but evolve and get better over time. That's the real crucial part.
Hey, we just had a little blackout. We're back. So go for it. Sorry, what were you saying?
I say it's important. It's crucial that you train your SDRs, and it's really important that you train your cloud SDRs on what they're doing well. So not just that they can stay within bounds and not hallucinate, because that's crucial, but also they should be getting better as well.
Yeah. You spoke about this on the other call we had, where you described, you give it certain boundaries, as you're calling it, or certain parameters. You're teaching it about your organization. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about the process? What does that look like? And what are the boundaries that people should be aware of?
Yeah. So like with anything, and I don't care if you're using one of our cloud agents or if you're in Claude or ChatGPT, say, hey, give it those boundaries and say, hey, this is the space in which I want you to operate. It's like you're defining the playing field. Okay, here's the football field, and your goal is to get this football in the end zone. You need both of those pieces to make football work. Otherwise, it's a bunch of guys just running around a field. And so tell it, we tell it like, hey, this is your objective, is to convert people who attended this event and get them to take a meeting. And we have prompt engineers that help our clients do that. But then also it's important that you train them on who you are, your tone of voice. How do you talk about yourself? What messaging do you want out there? And then as well, it's important to say, okay, this is a methodology that we believe in. Hey, we want you to follow this style, this conversation. So if you're using some sort of coaching system with your SDR team, give it to your cloud agent as well. And so it can act within that. And the great thing about it is, if you train it on something, it's going to remember it and it's going to do it time and time again. Versus SDRs, I've managed SDRs for 12 years, and they have good days, they have bad days. And there are still certain things that cloud SDRs don't do as well as individuals. I think that person-to-person human touch, that outreach, that's something that it leaves the SDR more time, or the sales rep more time, to go ahead and do that. But those motions, those everyday motions that are just repetitive, let a cloud agent do that.
So with that in mind, where do you think your tool, as it currently stands, fits into the market? Is it more of an assistant to a current SDR? Is it complete replacement of an SDR? Is it both, depending upon the scenario? And any type of use cases you can give, I think, would be helpful as people think through this. Because obviously, somebody who has 60 SDRs has a much different use case than the guy who's, I need to hire an SDR. And so I'm sure the guy that's hiring an SDR is going, can I just use these guys instead of hiring that SDR, versus the people that have 60 SDRs, maybe they're thinking of downsizing. We just took one team here at NextGen from 60 down to 20 reps, mm-hmm. and more efficient. But sometimes we have this other client where they have 60 SDRs and they're like, we don't want to get rid of any of them. We just want to make them better. So what use case do you fit in, would you say, at this point?
The answer is yes. And I'll give you an example. We were talking to a company last week who, they were going for the round of funding, and the VC fund that they were working with said, hey, what you really need to do is ramp up your prospecting team. And the issue with that is just how expensive that is, the lead time on that. And they were really hesitant. Great. This is a great case for us to do that at 1/10 the cost. We can do that right away. You can focus on bringing on account executives or some of those more nuanced individuals. So we can help there. On the other hand, we have some large organizations that will have teams of 60 SDRs. And one of the issues that they run into is SDR tenure, right? Average SDR tenure is what, 12 months to 14 months, something like that. And SDRs typically, if you ask them, they took the job because they want to become AEs. And so the first opportunity they have to become an AE, they're going to jump at it, whether that be internally or externally. With companies like that, we say, hey, use our cloud SDRs as that assistant. In fact, we've got clients who are using it, and they assign a cloud SDR to an actual human SDR and they work together and they train that SDR. And what happens is that cloud SDR is getting the institutional knowledge, the tribal knowledge that the SDR has internally. And so when that SDR is promoted to an account executive or leaves because they only got, they're not a chief attainment and they're replaced, now you have a resource for that new SDR, or you need less SDRs because you have this one doing some of those tasks and you just don't need the headcounts. There's a great way to look at both to augment what that team is doing.
Gotcha. Yeah. So how can people, I just know because I'm in this camp where I'm like, the only reason I'm not leveraging an AI SDR at this current time, so I don't have a horse, not like I use one and I'm like, Azure is better or not. My objection generally comes back to, okay, it sounds great. It's like literally solves so many of my problems. Because for me, a fractional CRO, we set up sales operations for a bunch of teams. The number one problem I faced in my career is SDR turnover and SDR training. And that's the reason we have 100-page, what we call the 3-day challenge, to train these guys, because I want to know if they're trainable before they even get on the phones. And most of the bullshit tends to come from SDRs. No offense to SDRs. I love you guys.
But I managed SDRs for 12 years. Yep. The drama alone.
The drama. Are they doing what they're supposed to do? I even put out on LinkedIn a few days ago, literally something called the bullshit auditor, just to find out if the guy was actually doing his job. So you're solving a massive problem. But with the big if is, if it, and what you've shown me so far is very intriguing because it seems like it does. But how can you de-risk it for people in terms of, let's say that they put this in your system, your system in their world, and they decide not to hire an SDR. They just want to make sure it works before they jump all in. I certainly would find myself in that camp. How do you guys address that? Or how do you guys de-risk it for people who are skeptical, but really need what you offer?
Yeah. So we realize that's one of the big concerns, right? Is how good is it really? And I don't care how good your demo is. There's always that thought of, like, behind the scenes, what are they pulling? What are they doing? And what I like to say is, hey, let's do this. If you want to try it, let's do it. Let's do it and give you a 90-day out. And if it's not performing, we look at 90 days, let's check in on it. And if it's not performing, it's not doing what it should in 90 days, we'll end the contract. Like, we want it to make sure that it's useful. The last
is that money-back guarantee or yeah, is that just through that?
Yeah, so it's not money-back guarantee, but we'll let you out of the rest of the contract. And if you're really, really hung up on it, like, we can do a 60-day. Like, ultimately, we want to make sure there does need to be enough time for us to train it and fine-tune it. But ultimately, I want to make sure that this is useful and this is good data. And then it's providing, it's doing what it should be doing. I've talked to plenty of people where they come to us and say, hey, this is what I want. And I was like, I know, but you're doing no outreach. You have no one to call on. You've got no motion. You've got so many other things to tackle before this. Focus on that. And then we'll help you out, because I just don't want someone to think this is the magic bullet. It does do amazing things, but you've got to be ready for that outbound motion or that inbound motion or a website traffic so we can react to it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point, because I think that a lot of, especially smaller founders, less than a million, they're asking themselves, what do I do when? And the answer of what to do really does depend a lot on when, when in the cycle they are, how much revenue they have, what other pieces of the outbound puzzle do they have in place? And you alluded to some of the things earlier. So the question then for you is, what is a perfect ideal customer profile for you? If you could service the perfect, you can speak to them right now. Who are those people and who do you think you would provide the most value to?
Yeah. If you've got an SDR team that you're growing and you're saying, okay, great, I need to make this more efficient, or I want my SDR team to focus on more of that the personal part of the SDR motion, would be a great fit for you. If you are looking to scale up a team and you're like, all right, I can't wait that 6 months for onboarding. I need one day onboarding. Great. Let's need to fine tune it, obviously, but our agent can go like right away. If you're in one of those camps, we can help you out, right? If you need, if you're expanding your customer base, for example, you're by saying, hey, you're reaching out to current customers, we can help with that.
Would you say that you work mostly with founders, or are you working with a lot of SDR directors, managers, sales managers? Who do you typically work with?
Yeah, it runs the gamut. We've got some really large enterprise organizations that we work with where you know, we're working with the CMO and the CEO. And then we've got others who are a couple of guys, they've got a really good idea and they're ready to scale it up and they're taking it to market. And they might be an expert in what they do, but they don't have the language or the ability to sell it or to pitch it for those prospecting calls. We've helped out with those as well. We've structured Signals in a way that if we need to help with something huge, we can help with that, but we can scale it down as well.
In terms of what they need in place mm-hmm. to win. So obviously people that have an SDR team that are trying to grow, need more efficiency, that makes a lot. But what, like you alluded to earlier, and you mentioned a couple of things that were needed. What are the critical components that have to be in place? And it sounds like to some degree, some GTM motion around marketing, whether that's social, whether that's outbound led, all bad, whatever you want to call it these days. There's different ways to skin the cat, but you need to get eyeballs on websites and on social posts and be marketing to them in some way. What do you think needs to be in place and how much volume needs to be in place for your agent to be effective? Or is it possible to put them in a completely cold outbound motion without that stuff?
It can be cold. AI agents do follow, there's some laws and things they need to follow. And if you've got just to give them a list, people have to opt in and be okay with receiving a call like this. And just throwing a list at it probably isn't the best use. But if it's people who attended an event before, that kind of, or filled out a form, it's responding to a white paper download, we can help out with that. And in terms of what they need in place, it's ultimately we can craft and sculpt our agent to what you're doing. Ultimately, you need to have an idea of this is what I want this agent to do, this very specific thing, first and foremost. And then obviously we need some stuff to train it on, whether that be content that you've put out, your website, white papers, what have you. We just need to be able to train this agent. And that's, it's talk of bare bones. That's really all we need. And I think I showed you the other day, I just based off your website, I threw one together so you could just see what it could do. All it did is scrape your site and answer some questions. We were able to question it and see what it was able to do for you guys.
Yeah, I understand fully now. So basically post lead capture, SDR work, more on the inbound motion rather than say the pure outbound motion. It sounds like that's correct. And it sounds like the more information you can give it to work off, the better.
Yeah.
And I think is a forewarning to any founder who's, this will solve all of my cold calling efforts. It doesn't sound like that's the purpose. The purpose here is to deal with a team that already has a marketing motion in place that's generating volume and now just needs faster, better, more coherent, and more organized follow-up. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, there is an outbound case for it. For example, we have these quarterly summits, big virtual online events. We use those lists to give our agent, and our agent goes out and invites people to attend that event. That's cold, but it's more warm calling, right? So it can be used for that or trade show follow-up. But in terms of just like downloading a list from some provider and saying, throw it into this tool, how effective is that with SDRs? Not as effective. It's if you can get some driver where, hey, they fill out a form, they download a white paper, this is going to call instantly. They could answer all the questions about the white paper they downloaded, get some more insight on what they're looking for, and maybe route in a live AE as an example of how it could be used inbound, right?
Yeah, makes sense. Do you think you guys are going in that direction of being able to do, like, for example, in a perfect world, this is like me, I don't have to hire anybody except for the most senior salesperson who is the human face, but I have somebody who can essentially disrupt even what we do at Next Gen Sales Leaders, which is we go out, we curate the list, we put it in and we do all of the enrichment. We look for signals from all these different tools like Trigify and Ocean.io and RB2B, et cetera. And then we make sure that the email is verifiable. We add cell phone records. And then we actually will start to do the outbound motion, which is structure the outbound campaign. We will do trigger-based campaigns based upon certain events, like somebody read a certain blog article, for example. And do the research on all the social profiles and find out when they commented on Frank's post. And, oh, I saw you comment on Frank's post on this subject, and then send a very specific thing.
Yeah.
Do you see it going in that direction?
Yeah. In fact, what you're describing, though, in fairness, are all things that kind of warm it up. So those are all things that we could do. What I tell our clients not to do is just take a list, throw it into this at our agent and expect it to fix everything. The signal-based trigger events, as you call them, we call them behavioral signals. That's a crucial opportunity to be able to reach out and reach out right away. And timeliness is crucial. And that's great. Absolutely a place that we could be used. Or sending a text message on behalf of an AE to say, hey, just reminding you, you've got this meeting later today. Responding to social. Those are all things that we're able to do. We are just about to roll out the ability to demo software.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I want to know about that.
Yeah. It's amazing because you set it up and it goes through your software and it says, hey, what is it that you're, the instance I saw, what do you want to see? What is it that you're trying to solve for? Okay, great. Let me show you those things. And if you have a question, ask along the way. And so it shows how you would use this, your software, your solution, walking you through that conversation. And if you have questions, hey, show me this. Okay, what questions do you have about that? It's answering the questions. The most beautiful part of that whole thing is it's gathering that intelligence of what was it they were more interested in? What did they want to see more of? What questions they have? That's all going into CRM. So that if it does go to an AE, when someone actually does go ahead and look at it, they have all that data. They know exactly, they're not picking up from square one. A real person is armed with all of that. Now, what we're working towards is on some high volume items, being able to go through the whole sales process. It just depends on the individual company and what they're trying to do.
So as a follow-up to the sales cycle length, I think that's an important parameter to mm-hmm. consider. Because I think that for me, as I thought through these AI type SDRs, I've always considered them to be at least the early stages, say 2 years ago. I remember I was on a call 2 years ago about a go high level chatbot that people were building mm-hmm. GPT. And everyone was marketing that. And it was more about somebody just opted in. And now you're going back and forth through a text message with ChatGPT. And it was meant for very simple sales cycles. It was like opt in, very obvious offer. What kind of questions do you have? Great. I'm going to set the meeting for you. Boom, you're done. And that was the end of it. What it sounds like you guys are delving into is far more intricate and complex and multi-touch across the entire sales cycle, even as we're finding out here mm-hmm. on the demo. And in my experience, I've sold several million-dollar plus contracts, many $200,000 plus contracts to the biggest oil and gas companies in the world. I used to do a lot of software in oil and gas. That I'm proud of that. It's just that's what my experience is.
Sure.
It's actually quite grueling. And so I'm saying this all to say that it is quite complex. The multi-decision maker stakeholder procurement from IT to the executive suite down to the middle management, the end users. Sometimes I have these org charts of 40 people, and I've been in pitches at the end where there's literally 40 people in the room and nobody knows each other. And I've introduced everybody. I'm like the glue that put mm-hmm. together the whole thing. Do you ever see your tool being able to do something like that? Or do you think people like me, enterprise level salespeople, will always exist?
I think that we could look, for example, at right now, we could look at all of the signals, the behavioral signals of all those individuals, right? And then tailor out to all of them specific messaging based off who they are and what role they play in the motion. And we could go ahead, for example, and bring in the contact information for them and automate that. But also, what if we could watch their social feed and say, hey, guess what? You're in the middle of the sales motion and this one key stakeholder, they just started following your competitor. Let's either reach out to them or let's feed the sales, act as a sales assistant to feed that to the sales rep. The one thing that AI does far superior to any human is summarize and consolidate data. And so it's able to simultaneously, if you've got 40 people with 40 data feeds as an individual, you know how difficult that is to manage. So imagine mm-hmm. that this could bring all this data together and strategize and inform the rep on, hey, this is what you need to be aware of. This just changed in your motion. And tell the rep, hey, maybe you want to, on your next call, do X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. Both the outreach, but also as an assistant informing and be an intelligence tool.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I can see that being extremely valuable, by the way. For me, I was talking to senior level salesperson at Salesforce the other day. He was asking me, what do you think's going to happen with our jobs? And I was like, my take was enterprise level sales. I would say one, go up market, because I think the further enterprise you go, the more protected you are. Mm-hmm. But two is, I just think that humans, to deal with humans, I think there is some element of that, especially when it comes to very intensive buying cycles. Because the reality is that when people are buying at the enterprise level, say it's an end user or a middle manager or even an executive, they're called executive sponsors for a reason, they're champions for a reason, because they're literally putting their name on a piece of paper that says, I'm willing to represent this as a good choice that could be a $1 million contract, and it's going to change the trajectory of, say, 1,000 users at the field level in a way that is meaningful over the course of the next 10 years. And so they're putting their line, their career on the line,
sure,
in a major way. And so for me, I think that because of that, there's this heightened scrutiny they give to purchasing as well. But then the sales rep needs to be building trust. And so I think this is my thesis. I could be so wrong. Maybe we're all replaced by AI. We're all sitting on a beach in 5 years, 10 years. But I believe there's always going to be that human component. And I think there's actually going to be some level of an approved, like on a Zoom call or something like this, where it actually says verified human by biometrics, because people want to know they're talking to about that. Do you think I'm off? Do you have a different contrarian view that AI is coming for us all?
So yes and no. I think what the studies are telling us is that 10% of jobs are going to be gone in the next 2 years due to AI. And I think that those of us who want to stick around are going to learn how to use it and leverage it well. And those who are going to be gone are going to be the ones who don't know how to use this new tool. I think about growing up in Detroit, I was there when the assembly lines workers were being replaced by robotics. And it's not that there are no humans on the assembly line. It's just there are humans who know how to run the robots. There are humans who know how to do certain artistic finishing touches. There are more specific use cases for that human touch, the part that requires thinking and strategy versus turning the same bolt over and over. On an enterprise level, I do think that one of the reasons you hire an enterprise rep is because their ability to network, to reach out, to be a human touch point to that executive sponsor. However, I do think that AI can be a tool they have in their back pocket to say, hey, listen, if you have any questions about our solution, let me know. Or you can call my AI assistant and my AI assistant can answer any questions you've got. Or if you need to book time with me. We already use scheduling links, right? So if you need to book time with me, great. Just call this number or email my assistant. She'll work it. She'll figure it out. Focusing on those parts that are just repetitive, that don't require the expertise of an actual enterprise rep. And what that's going to do is it's going to take those parts of the job off the table for an enterprise rep. So what does that leave the enterprise rep able to do? Focus on the parts that they do best, which is that human-to-human interaction.
Yeah.
And I think 100%. That's what we're going to see happen.
I'm with you. I think that I have a saying in enterprise sales that 80% of the ability to know what's going on is actually revenue operations. And that's mm-hmm. a contrarian view, because everyone thinks it's all about the sales rep. And my thing is, it's a big data problem. It's you have all these signals, to your point, that are happening behind the scenes. I think the Sixth Sense, one of the older, this idea that there's things happening in the background that nobody sees, and the enterprise rep is only as good as the last conversation they had and their memory of how the whole web plays together. And so you have someone like me who's been known to go into some type of lucid chart type of diagramming software and actually create these organizational structures to just remember who is who. And so if there's a way to create better scaffolding that is not only showing who is everybody and how they're connected, but then to show, oh, Mary messaged Jane on LinkedIn and then Frank just visited the website after you had that big 30-person meeting webinar. And then you can start to actually ask the AI, okay, all of this is happening. What do I do next?
Mm-hmm.
As an AE, I got all these people. Oh, you got to talk to Jane because Jane just did this. And we really think this is going to make a meaningful difference. Every time you do a dinner, so maybe you have a dinner activity in your CRM.
Yep.
Every time you do a dinner post-webinar, you have a 30% conversion to sale. Like, that would be very interesting for me. So is that aligning with your vision here?
Yeah. Part of what we have within our platform, one of the core parts is a signal score. And what we're doing is, I think that lead scoring, for example, has traditionally been really guess and check. Throw the grass in the air, see which way the wind blows. Let's give them 10 points for this, 15 points for this. What we're doing is we're saying, okay, let's watch and see what does it take to go from an unknown visitor to an open op to a closed deal. And that score adjusts over time. But also, just because someone takes exactly the same activity from one company to the other, you all have different sales motions. And so prescribing what you should do to bring that score up is going to be different. And watching, hey, what nuanced activities could you take to get that person more engaged? I've used that score in deals reviews with reps. And it's so funny because I think the other thing that, you know, about your RevOps point is sales reps tend to have happy ears. Like we hear that all the time. And they want to be really optimistic about their deals. And RevOps tends not to. Cloud agents and AI doesn't have happy ears. It's going to tell you what's exactly what's there. And so I would sit there and point this score out. Hey, we're losing this. You're slipping. No, I got this. This is they're on board. And if we lost a deal, we could trace it back to when that score started to go down because we're watching, like you mentioned, that dark funnel, those things that there's no way a sales rep could possibly have their hands around all of that behavior. That's what 100%. AI can do well.
So I'm going to pivot here and I'm going to go into a slightly different direction.
Yeah.
In terms of the backstory of how you guys got here, because I have a fascinating backstory, and especially at Inside Sales, I'd love to hear that because that's a well-known name, at least for people that have been around the block for the last decade and a half.
Yeah.
And I know the original founder of that company is now founder of this company, Signals. Would love to know your overall backstory. Like, how did you get into sales? What journey have you been on? And why do you want to do what you're doing now? I'm curious.
Yeah. So I was a financial advisor for, I would say 10, 15 years. I was at Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch, and built a practice there and realized that ultimately I just didn't like what I was doing. I was going to work before my kids woke up and I came home after they went to bed. And it didn't, as my wife likes to remind me, bring me joy. And I sold my book of business and wanted to get into sales and living here in Utah, get in the tech community. What I realized was if you were to ask me about X dividend dates, if you were asking me about annuity payouts or how to rate a mutual fund, I was your guy. If you asked me what API meant or what implementation even was, I couldn't tell you. And so I needed to develop the language. And fortunately, because of the way I left that industry, I was able to take some time, take a step back and took a job as a BDR at InsideSales.com. And
year was this?
I want to say it was 2014.
So you found these guys. Did you know anything about enterprise sales at this point?
Nothing. I knew this is my first. I'd used Salesforce. I had bought some one-off software when I was as a financial advisor. But most everything, especially when you work with those organizations, they want to tell you exactly what to use and how to use it. And they don't like too much creativity that way. No, I had no language. And I went to work as a BDR. The ultimate goal, I wanted to become an AE. But first, I knew I needed to learn how do I speak tech. And I had done a little bit of stuff, built out a database for my dad's company, played around with some websites for some projects, but nothing real. And I have this at my desk. One of the first things I was given was this book, was The Cheater's Guide to Product Messaging at Inside Sales. And it had every feature, every product that Inside Sales had. It had a breakdown of here's a long explanation, here's a 20-word explanation, a 10 and a 5-word explanation. So suddenly I had a cheat code to talk to people like I knew what I was talking about. And just like learning a language over time, the language developed. I ran mid-market business development for Inside Sales. And in 2017, I left and ran to go run business development at another company and then got pulled back. The Inside Sales renamed themselves Zant, X-A-N-T. And I was brought back to help rebuild their BDR team. And in the process, I stayed in touch with Dave Elkington. Dave was one of the founders of Inside Sales. He had left. And he and a partner had built this consultancy helping to streamline and optimize chatbots on your website. And I actually hired him while I was at Avanti in between my stints at Inside Sales and to help us optimize our bot instance. And what I didn't realize was they were looking at, hey, what kind of data can be gathered from a bot? They were using this as case studies. And when everybody went home for COVID, they sent their devs home to go start building out a platform. And eventually they were asking for someone to head up their sales team. And I jumped at it and came on board about 3 years ago. And it's been really cool to see this evolve and grow over time from what it was when I first came on, which was a contextually aware chatbot, to these cloud agents, and evolve into this and see where it's going from here on out.
They're bootstrapped at this point, right?
Yeah. No outside funding. We're doing it all on our own. Yeah. It's got its challenges for sure, but you know what? We don't have anybody telling us what we can and can't do, what we should and shouldn't focus on. It's great.
And so what exact date was the company founded, and how many years have you guys been up?
Yeah, it was founded in 2017. And then, like I said, I've been here for 3 years. It's evolved over time to become what it is now. We rebranded from our old name, which was ChatFunnels, into Signals a year and a half ago. Yeah.
Why the change on that? ChatFunnels is a cool name, but why Signals? Yeah. I like Signals too, by the way.
Yeah, because ChatFunnels, it made us look like a chatbot solution. Everything was about the chatbot. And one of the things that we don't call our cloud agents chatbots, they're agents. And we even have one that'll do a text interaction on your website. That's not a chatbot. It's a text cloud agent. Chatbots, in my mind, follow workflows. They go through your traditional, here are your three answers that you can choose from. These are very different. And so we needed to make sure we reflected like our focus and bringing in that entire digital footprint, which is why we changed the name.
That makes sense. I can't imagine how much you guys paid for that domain.
That's one where I let Dave, you run with that. I'll just enjoy the fact that I've got it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good domain name. I love the idea of brand salience, and where you say a name like next gen sales leaders. It's obvious. It's like we're trying to create the next generation of sales leaders. So I like names like that where it's obvious when you hear it. Signals is certainly spot on. I know we're almost out of time here. I got a couple last questions for you, and then we can break. Do you got 5 more minutes?
Yeah, let's go for it.
What signals are you actually tracking at this point? And what is your plan for tracking additional signals in the future?
Yeah, we are literally tracking everything from hiring data to tech stack to follow social data. What are they doing on your website? How many times have they been to the website? Who's on your website? What are they doing in CRM? Are they responding to emails? Are they taking phone calls? If you log and look at the data, we're gathering it. Did you see them at a trade show? If there is data that one of our clients says, hey, you know what? I really need this data. We'll look at it. If we can find a way to get it, we'll grab it and add it to the mix. And, everything that we can kind of get our hands on, because the more we can train these agents on your use case, the more effective they're going to be.
One of the questions I have generally is there's so many signal-based platforms out there, which like some. Triggerfy is a good example, social-based signals, and RB is a good example of like website-based signals. And there's another 40 or 50 of these guys, right? More and more coming out every single day. But then there's other competitors that are doing what you're doing too, and they're also gathering signal data. So everyone has their own kind of approach on signal data. And an example of where I think it gets interesting is that, for example, I'm a subscriber to RB2B, and I'm also a subscriber to Instantly's website visitors. And so what I found is that even though it's the same product offering, the result is actually interestingly different, meaning that I find different people on my websites from these different platforms. So one is not complete and the other one is not complete. They actually don't overlap.
Sure.
And so there's an argument there that because the market's moving so quickly and these different kind of niche products are popping up around signals, that at some point, there's no way you guys, maybe you can, but I would imagine that it's just difficult to compete against on their specific secret sauce mission on a very particular niche signal. So how do you think about that when it comes to you guys being a signal platform, but people still love their RB2B?
Sure. So if RB2B's got some data that we're just not able to have, the key is what are they doing with it? And if they're putting into Salesforce, for example, they're putting into CRM, or we can connect to it and leverage that, we absolutely will. Let's use the data. If you've got data, let's use it. Let's even test it to see, does it have an impact on determining who's buying and who's not? And It could be psychographic data. I know that's data that we use internally, is like a psychological profile of who people are. Let's use that to inform the agent. If you're using some tool, let's ingest it. Let's use it. Ultimately, what we care about is, are we driving pipeline for our client?
To shorten the output of that is that if you can get access to the data, you can do something with it that's meaningful. And so it's, the key thing is, like, CRMs matter. You know, put the data in the CRM somehow and then give you guys access to the CRMs. What CRMs do you guys work with currently?
Right now, it's primarily amazing integrations with Salesforce and HubSpot. We're working on a couple others on having real as good an integration as we do with those two. Right now, if we don't have an integration with them, we can link into it with a tool like a Zapier, for example, to get that data. We even have some clients who we wish they had a CRM, and I would never sell us as a CRM, but we're gathering enough data that they use us as a very light one. But if they've got some sort of integration we can connect to, or I think we're trying to do like a Zoho and a Pipedrive next.
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure, please.
I would love for you guys to do Close. I hate Zoho. I think Zoho is, by the way, I'm saying this to anyone who knows, I've been a Salesforce admin, HubSpot admin. I actively am managing a Zoho account for one of the clients. Pipedrive, Copper, you name it, a level of all the CRMs, I am a diehard Close lover. And just because for anybody under 100 reps, it's just by far the simplest. And I'm not being paid to say that. I genuinely believe that after trying all these other ones. So if you guys could create an integration to Close, I have a bunch of clients that are ready for this. So let's go.
I'll tell you, Zoho, though, they do have the, as far as marketing goes, they had a marketing motion. I was at Dreamforce one year and we just came out of Benioff's keynote. So we're all coming out of the Moscone Center and we look up and Zoho had paid for a Skywriter to come over the top of the Moscone Center that Albert prefers Zoho CRM, like right over the top of the Dreamforce. And I thought, okay, that's a baller move right there.
It is a baller move. Yeah. I mean, for me, my bias is towards what I call the unit economics of the sales rep.
Absolutely.
So for me, it is not a marketing tool.
Right.
Close. It is meant specifically for inside sales teams to have the simplest data model with all the key activity one stream with a centralized inbox. And so with Zoho, because they do have powerful marketing capabilities and they have many other things. It's basically a competitor to Google Drive. Mm-hmm. And so we use them for a support desk at one of the clients that we manage. And there's a lot of great things about them. I'm not completely hating on Zoho. It's just for what tool do you need for the job? And so when it comes to me on new sales operations, I always recommend Close. For maybe a larger org, I would consider HubSpot. I just basically always say no to Salesforce unless it's over 100 reps.
Yeah.
And Zoho, I usually don't recommend, but I'm forced to.
I talk to people all the time. Well, they'll have a 10 person organization and they've got a tech stack that is way, I hate to say more than they need, but it's way overkill for, they're burning a bunch of money.
Exactly.
And let's make sure it all fits.
Like with Salesforce, you need Marketo or some Pardot, whatever you're using, and then you're going to need a sales loft, and then you're going to need four other bolt-ons to make it actually work the way you want. And for me, what I look for in a platform is I need integrated dialing, SMS, email, tasks, a very simple view pipeline, great analytics, great filtering, a built-in workflow automation like sales loft, where you have automated texting, follow-up calls, and everything like that. And so if we could add on a product like yours into a simple system like that, and it was native, oh my God, sign me up. Let's go.
Yeah, I'll have my dev team take a look at it.
All right. Really appreciate you being on the podcast. Obviously, we want people to find you. Where can people find you after this?
Yeah, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn, Steve Ehrer Jr. There's two of us. I'm the junior. But also getsignals.ai is our website. And LinkedIn, I'm happy to answer any questions you've got as well. And it will be me, not an AI, answering the questions. So.
All right. Go find Steve on LinkedIn, guys. As always, thank you for listening to the Next Gen Sales Leader podcast. And I'll see you guys on the next episode. See you later.
Thanks.